Arya. Arya's stitches were crooked again. She frowned down on them with dismay and glanced over to where her sister Sansa sat among the other girls. Sansa's needlework was exquisite. Everyone said so. "Sansa's work is as pretty as she is," Septa Mordaine told their lady mother once. "She has such fine, delicate hands." When Lady Catelyn had asked about Arya, the Septa sniffed. "Arya has the hands of a blacksmith." Arya glanced furtively across the room, worried the Septa Mordaine might have read her thoughts, but the Septa was paying her no attention today. She was sitting with the Princess Marcella, all smiles and admiration. It was not often that the Septa was privileged to instruct a royal princess in the womanly arts, as she had said when the Queen brought Marcella to join them. Arya thought Marcella's stitches looked a little crooked, too, but you would never know it from the way Septa Mordaine was cooing. She studied her own work again, looking for some way to salvage it, then sighed and put down the needle. She looked glumly at her sister. Sansa was chatting away happily as she worked. Beth Cassell, Sir Roderick's little girl, was sitting by her feet, listening to every word she said, and Jane Poole was leaning over to whisper something in her ear. "What are you talking about?" Arya asked suddenly. Jane gave a startled look, then giggled. Sansa looked abashed. Beth blushed. No one answered. "Tell me," Arya said. Jane glanced over to make certain that Septa Mordaine was not listening. Marcella said something then, and the Septa laughed along with the rest of the ladies. "We were talking about the prince," Sansa said, her voice soft as a kiss. Arya knew which prince she meant. Joffrey, of course, the tall, handsome one. Sansa got to sit with him at the feast. Arya had to sit with the little, fat one, naturally. "Joffrey likes your sister," Jane whispered, proud as if she had something to do with it. She was a daughter of Winterfell Stewart and Sansa's dearest friend. He told her she was very beautiful. "He's going to marry her," little Beth said dreamily, hugging herself. "Then Sansa will be queen of all the realm." Sansa had the grace to blush. She blushed prettily. She did everything prettily, Arya thought with dull resentment. "Beth, you shouldn't make up stories," Sansa corrected the younger girl, gently stroking her hair to take the harshness out of her words. She looked at Arya. "What do you think of Prince Joff's sister?" "He's very gallant, don't you think?" "John says he looks like a girl," Arya said. Sansa sighed as she stitched. "Oh, poor John," she said. "He gets jealous because he's a bastard." "He's our brother," Arya said, much too loudly. Her voice cut through the afternoon quiet of the tile room. Septa Mordaine raised her eyes. She had a bony face, sharp eyes, and a thin, lipless mouth made for frowning. It was frowning now. "What are you talking about, children?" "Our half-brother," Sansa corrected, soft and precise. She smiled for the Septa. "Arya and I were remarking on how pleased we were to have the princess with us today," she said. Septa Mordaine nodded. "Indeed, a great honour for us all." Princess Marcella smiled uncertainly at the compliment. "Arya, why aren't you at work?" the Septa asked. She rose to her feet, starched skirts rustling as she started across the room. "Let me see your stitches." Arya wanted to scream. It was just like Sansa to go and attract the Septa's attention. "Here," she said, surrendering her work. The Septa examined the fabric. "Arya, Arya, Arya," she said. "This will not do. This will not do at all." Everyone was looking at her. It was too much. Sansa was too well bred to smile at her sister's disgrace, but Jane was smirking on her behalf. Even Princess Marcella looked sorry for her. Arya felt tears filling her eyes. She pushed herself out of her chair and bolted for the door. Septa Mordaine called after her. "Arya, come back here. Don't you take another step. Your lady mother will hear of this in front of our royal princess, too. You'll shame us all." Arya stopped at the door and turned back, biting her lip. The tears were running down her cheeks now. She managed a stiff little bow to Marcella. "By your leave, my lady." Marcella blinked at her and looked to her ladies for guidance. But if she was uncertain, Sceptre Mordain was not.
"Just where do you think you're going, Arya?"
the Sceptre demanded. Arya glared at her. "I have to go and shoe a horse," she said sweetly, taking a brief satisfaction in the shock on the Sceptre's face. Then she whirled and made her exit, running down the steps as fast as her feet would take her. It wasn't fair. Sansa had everything. Sansa was 2 years older. Maybe by the time Arya had been born, there had been nothing left. Often it felt that way. Sansa could sew and dance and sing. She wrote poetry. She knew how to dress. She played the high harp and the bells. Worse, she was beautiful. Sansa had gotten their mother's fine high cheekbones and the thick auburn hair of the Tullys. Arya took after their lord father. Her hair was a lusterless brown, and her face was long and solemn. Jane used to call her Arya Horseface, and neigh when she came near. It hurt that the one thing Arya could do better than her sister was ride a horse. Well, that, and manage a household. Sansa had never had much of a head for figures. If she did marry Prince Joff, Arya hoped for his sake that he had a good steward. Nymeria was waiting for her in the guardroom at the bottom of the stairs. She bounded to her feet as soon as she caught sight of Arya. Arya grinned. The wolf pup loved her, even if no one else did. They went everywhere together, and Nymeria slept in her room at the foot of her bed. If Mother had not forbidden it, Arya would gladly have taken the wolf with her to needlework. Let Sceptre Mordain complain about her stitches then. Nymeria nipped eagerly at her hand as Arya untied her. She had yellow eyes. When they caught the sunlight, they gleamed like two golden coins. Arya had named her after the warrior queen of the Roine, who had led her people across the Narrow Sea. That had been a great scandal, too. Sansa, of course, had named her pup Lady. Arya made a face and hugged the wolfling tight. Nymeria licked her ear, and she giggled. By now, Sceptre Mordain would certainly have sent word to her lady mother. If she went to her room, they would find her. Arya did not care to be found. She had a better notion. The boys were at practice in the yard. She wanted to see Rob put gallant Prince Joffrey flat on his back. "Come," she whispered to Nymeria. She got up and ran, the wolf coming hard at her heels. There was a window in the covered bridge between the armory and the great keep, where you had a view of the whole yard. That was where they headed. They arrived, flushed and breathless, to find John seated on the sill, one leg drawn up languidly to his chin. He was watching the action so absorbed that he seemed unaware of her approach until his white wolf moved to meet them. Nymeria stalked closer on wary feet. Ghost, already larger than his litter mates, smelled her, gave her ear a careful nip, and settled back down. John gave her a curious look. "Shouldn't you be working on your stitches, little sister?" Arya made a face at him. "I wanted to see them fight." He smiled. "Come here, then." Arya climbed up on the window and sat beside him, to a chorus of thuds and grunts from the yard below. To a disappointment, it was the younger boys drilling. Bran was so heavily padded, he looked as though he had belted on a feather bed. And Prince Tommen, who was plump to begin with, seemed positively round. They were huffing and puffing and hitting each other with padded wooden swords under the watchful eye of old Sir Roderick Cassell, the master-at-arms, a great stout keg of a man, with magnificent white cheek whiskers. A dozen spectators, man and boy, were calling out encouragement, Rob's voice the loudest among them. She spotted Theon Greyjoy beside him, his black doublet emblazoned with the golden kraken of his house, a look of wry contempt on his face. Both of the combatants were staggering. Arya judged that they had been at it a while. "A shade more exhausting than needlework," John observed. "A shade more fun than needlework," Arya gave back at him. John grinned, reached over, and messed up her hair. Arya flushed. They'd always been close. John had his father's face, as she did. They were the only ones. Rob and Sansa and Bran, and even little Rickon, all took after the Tullys, with easy smiles and fire in their hair. When Arya had been little, she had been afraid that meant that she was a bastard too. It had been John she had gone to in her fear, and John who had reassured her. "Why aren't you down in the yard?" Arya asked him. He gave her a half smile. "Bastards are not allowed to damage young princes," he said. "Any bruises they take in the practice yard must come from true-born swords." "Oh," Arya felt abashed. She should have realized. For the second time today, Arya reflected that life was not fair. She watched her little brother whack at Tommen. "I could do just as good as Bran," she said. "He's only 7, I'm 9. John looked her over with all his 14-year-old wisdom. "You're too skinny," he said. He took her arm to feel her muscle. Then he sighed and shook his head. "I doubt you could even lift a longsword, little sister, never mind swing one." Arya snatched back her arm and glared at him. John messed up her hair again. They watched Bran and Tommen circle each other. "You see Prince Joffrey?" John asked. She hadn't, not at first glance, but when she looked again, she found him to the back, under the shade of a high stone wall. He was surrounded by men she did not recognize, young squires in the livery of Lannister and Baratheon, strangers all. There were a few older men among them, knights, she surmised. "Look at the arms on his surcoat," John suggested. Arya looked. An ornate shield had been embroidered on the prince's padded surcoat. No doubt the needlework was exquisite. The arms were divided down the middle. On one side was the crown stag of the royal house, on the other the lion of Lannister. "The Lannisters are proud," John observed. "You think the royal sigil would be sufficient, but no. He makes his mother's house equal in honour to the king's." "The woman is important too," Arya protested. John chuckled. "Perhaps you should do the same thing, little sister. Wed Tully to Stark in your arms."
"A wolf with a fish in its mouth," it made her laugh. "That would look silly. Besides, if a girl can't fight, why should she have a coat of arms?"
John shrugged. "Girls get the arms, but not the swords. Bastards get the swords, but not the arms. I did not make the rules, little sister." There was a shout from the courtyard below. Prince Tommen was rolling in the dust, trying to get up and failing. All the padding made him look like a turtle on its back. Bran was standing over him, with upraised wooden sword, ready to whack him again once he regained his feet. The men began to laugh. "Enough!" Sir Roderick called out. He gave the prince a hand and yanked him to his feet. "Well fought! Lou! Donis! Help them out of their armor!" He looked around. "Prince Joffrey! Rob! Will you go another round?" Rob, already sweaty from a previous bout, moved forward eagerly. "Gladly." Joffrey moved into the sunlight in response to Roderick's summons. His hair shone like spun gold. He looked bored. "This is a game for children, Sir Roderick." Theon Greyjoy gave a sudden bark of laughter. "You are children," he said derisively. "Rob may be a child," Joffrey said. "I am a prince, and I go tired of swatting at Starks with a play sword." "You got more swats than you gave, Joff," Rob said. "Are you afraid?" Prince Joffrey looked at him. "Oh, terrified," he said. "You're so much older." Some of the Lannister men laughed. John looked down on the scene with a frown. "Joffrey is truly a little shit," he told Arya. Sir Roderick tugged thoughtfully at his white whiskers. "What are you suggesting?" he asked the prince. "Live steel." "Done," Rob shot back. "You'll be sorry." The master-at-arms put a hand on Rob's shoulder to quiet him. "Live steel is too dangerous. I will permit you tawny swords with blunted edges." Joffrey said nothing. But a man strange to Arya, a tall knight with black hair and burnt scars in his face, pushed forward in front of the prince.
"This is your prince. Who are you to tell him he may not have an edge on his sword, sir?"
"Master-at-arms at Winterfell, Clegane, and you'll be well not to forget it."
"Are you training women here?"
the burn man wanted to know. He was muscled like a bull.
"I am training knights," Sir Roderick said pointedly. "They will have steel when they are ready, when they are of an age."
The burned man looked at Rob. "How old are you, boy?" 14, Rob said. "I killed a man at 12. You can be sure it was not with a blunt sword." Arya could see Rob bristle. His pride was wounded. He turned to Sir Roderick. Let me do it. I can beat him.
Beat him with a tawny blade, then, Sir Roderick said.
Joffrey shrugged. Come and see me when you're older, Stark, if you're not too old. There was laughter from the Lannister men. Rob's curses rang through the yard. Arya covered her mouth in shock. Theon Greyjoy seized Rob's arm to keep him away from the prince. Sir Roderick tugged at his whiskers in dismay. Joffrey feigned a yawn and turned to his younger brother. "Come, Tommen," he said. "The hour of play is done. Leave the children to their frolics." That brought more laughter from the Lannisters, more curses from Rob. Sir Roderick's face was beet red with fury under the white of his whiskers. Theon kept Rob locked in an iron grip until the princes and their party were safely away. John watched them leave, and Arya watched John. His face had grown as still as the pool at the heart of the Godswood. Finally, he climbed down off the window. "The show's done," he said. He bent to scratch Ghost behind the ear. The white wolf rose and rubbed against him. "You'd best run back to your room, little sister. Septimus Mordain will surely be lurking. The longer you hide, the sterner the penance. You'll be sowing all through the winter. When the spring thaw comes, they'll find your body with a needle still locked tight between your frozen fingers." Arya didn't think it was funny. "I hate needlework," she said with passion. "It's not fair."
"Nothing is fair," John said. He messed up her hair again and walked away from her, Ghost moving silently beside him. Nymeria started to follow too, then stopped, and came back when she saw that Arya was not coming. Reluctantly, she turned in the other direction. It was worse than John had thought. It wasn't Septa Mordain waiting in her room. It was Septa Mordain and her mother. Bran. The hunt left at dawn. The king wanted wild boar at the feast tonight. Prince Joffrey rode with his father, so Rob had been allowed to join the hunters as well. Uncle Benjen, Jory, Theon Greyjoy, Sir Roderick, and even the Queen's funny little brother had all ridden out with them. It was the last hunt, after all. On the morrow, they left for the south. Bran had been left behind with John and the girls and Rickon. But Rickon was only a baby, and the girls were only girls, and John and his wolf were nowhere to be found. Bran did not look for him very hard. He thought John was angry at him. John seemed angry with everyone these days. Bran did not know why. He was going with Uncle Ben to the wall to join the night's watch. That was almost as good as going south for the king. Rob was the one they were leaving behind, not John. For days, Bran could scarcely wait to be off. He was going to ride the king's road on a horse of his own. Not a pony, but a real horse. His father would be the hand of the king, and they were going to live in the Red Castle at King's Landing, the castle the Dragon Lords had built. Old Nan said there were ghosts there, and dungeons where terrible things had been done, and dragon heads on the walls. It gave Bran a shiver just to think of it, but he was not afraid. How could he be afraid? His father would be with him, and the king and all his knights and sworn swords. Bran was going to be a knight himself some day, one of the king's guard. Old Nan said they were the finest swords in all the realm. There were only 7 of them, and they wore white armor and had no wives or children, but lived only to serve the king. Bran knew all the stories. Their names were like music to him. Serwyn of the Mirror Shield, Sir Ryman Redwine, Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, the twins, Sir Eric and Sir Arik, who had died on one another's swords hundreds of years ago, when brother fought sister in the war the singers called the Dance of the Dragons. The White Bull, Gerard Hightower, Sir Arthur Dane, the Sword of the Morning, Barristan the Bold. 2 of the king's guards had come north with King Robert. Bran had watched them with fascination, never quite daring to speak to them. Sir Boris was a bald man with a jowly face. Sir Maron had droopy eyes and a beard the colour of rust. Sir Jamie Lannister looked more like the knights in the stories, and he was of the King's Guard, too. But Rob said he had killed the old mad king and shouldn't count any more. The greatest living knight was Sir Barristan Selmy, Barristan the Bold, the Lord Commander of the King's Guard. Father had promised that they would meet Sir Barristan when they reached King's Landing, and Bran had been marking the days on his wall, eager to depart, to see a world he had only dreamed of, and begin a life he could scarcely imagine. Yet now that the last day was at hand, suddenly Bran felt lost. Winterfell had been the only home he'd ever known. His father had told him that he ought to say his farewells today, and he had tried. After the hunt had ridden out, he wandered through the castle with his wolf at his side, intending to visit the ones who would be left behind. Old Nan, and Gage the cook, Micken in his smithy, Hodor, the stable boy, who smiled so much and took care of his pony, and never said anything but Hodor, the man in the glass garden who gave him a blackberry when he came to visit. But it was no good. He had gone to the stable first, and seen his pony there in its stall, except it wasn't his pony any more. He was getting a real horse, and leaving the pony behind. And all of a sudden, Bran just wanted to sit down and cry. He turned and ran off before Hodar and the other stable boys could see the tears in his eyes. That was the end of his farewells. Instead, Bran spent the morning alone in the guard's wood, trying to teach his wolf to fetch a stick, and failing. The wolfling was smarter than any of the hounds in his father's kennels, and Bran would have sworn he understood every word that was said to him, but he showed little interest in chasing sticks. He was still trying to decide on a name. Rob was calling his Grey Wind, because he ran so fast. Sansa had named hers Lady, and Arya named hers after some old witch queen in the songs, and little Rickon called his Shaggy Dog, which Bran thought was a pretty stupid name for a direwolf. John's wolf, the white one, was Ghost. Bran wished he had thought of that first, even though his wolf wasn't white. He had tried 100 names in the last fortnight, but none of them sounded right. Finally, he got tired of the stick game and decided to go climbing. He hadn't been up in the Broken Tower for weeks with everything that had happened, and this might be his last chance. He raced across the Guardswood, taking the long way around to avoid the pool where the heart tree grew. The heart tree had always frightened him. Trees ought not to have eyes, Bran thought, or leaves that look like hands. His wolf came sprinting at his heel. "You stay here," he told him, at the base of the sentinel tree near the armory wall. "Lie down. That's right, now stay." The wolf did as he was told. Bran scratched him behind the ears, then turned away, jumped, grabbed a low branch, and pulled himself up. He was halfway up the tree, moving easily from limb to limb, when the wolf got to his feet and began to howl. Bran looked back down. His wolf fell silent, staring up at him through slitted yellow eyes. A strange chill went through him. He began to climb again. Once more the wolf howled. "Quiet!" he yelled. "Sit down! Stay! You're worse than mother!" The howling chased him all the way up the tree, until finally he jumped off onto the armory roof and out of sight. The rooftops at Winterfell were Bran's second home. His mother often said that Bran could climb before he could walk. Bran could not remember when he first learned to walk, but he could not remember when he first started to climb either, so he supposed it must be true. To a boy, Winterfell was a grey stone labyrinth of walls and towers and courtyards and tunnels spreading in all directions. In the older parts of the castle, the hall slanted up and down, so that you couldn't be sure what floor you were on. The place had grown over the centuries like some monstrous stone tree, Maester Lewin told him once, and its branches were gnarled and thick and twisted, its roots sunk deep into the earth. When he got out from under it and scrambled up near the sky, Bran could see all of Winterfell in a glance. He liked the way it looked, spread out beneath him,
only birds wheeling over his head, while all the life of the castle went on below. Bran could perch for hours amongst the shapeless, rain-worn gargoyles that brooded over the first keep, watching it all. The men drilling with wood and steel in the yard, the cooks tending their vegetables in the glass garden, restless dogs running back and forth in the kennels, the silence of the guardswood, the girls gossiping beside the washing well. It made him feel like he was lord of the castle, in a way even Rob would never know.